it's kind of odd if you think about it, that we can have a high percentage of pastors who've lost track of the fact that the primary mission is to make disciples who make disciples. But that's really what's happened. The good news is there's a recognition of it now, and more churches are trying to move in that direction.
Greetings and welcome to the Missions Podcast, the show that explores your hard questions on missions, theology, and practice to help goers think and thinkers go. I'm Alex Kochman, Director of Communications and Engagement with ABWE, joined by the one and only illustrious Pastor Scott W. Dunford, here again for another frolic down the footpaths of faith and frontier missions.
Wow.
Scott W. Dunford, so glad to have you with us, my friend. And to all of you joining us here today, whether you're listening in your favorite podcast platform or watching on YouTube or on NRBTV, we're so grateful for each and every one of you. And if you are watching us online, go ahead and leave us a positive rating and review. Leave a comment if you're on YouTube. In fact, if you're on YouTube, leave us a comment today sharing what you think about the topic of discussion here. We're going to get into some interesting stuff with our friend Claire Jewell in just a moment. If you're a podcast listener, leaving us a positive rating and review will help other people to discover the content as well. Also, one other housekeeping item I have here, if you're watching on video, you can see 10 copies of Missions by the Book. We would love to give these away. And if you would like a copy, you have one task, and that is simply to email alex@missionspodcast.com. You can always reach out with questions or suggestions for guests that we should have. But also, if you would like to get your hands on a copy of this volume, helping you think through a theology of missions biblically, just reach out. We are giving them away to the first 10 people that email us. We would love to get these out of here and into the hands of churches that can be encouraged and equipped by them. Scott, we're joined by a friend today. Even though, you know, it's been a while since all of our paths have crossed together, we're also a part of the same broader ABWE family. Of course, our regular listeners know that the Missions Podcast is a part of the ministry of ABWE. So Scott, why don't you introduce our friend Claire for us today and our topic?
Well, I'm excited to introduce really a gem of a man named
a gem. Claire. You would say? Would you say he's?
I would
a
say
jewel?
That. I would say he's even a jewel. You know, a precious wow. jewel, and that is Dr. Claire Jewell, who we've worked together for many years now. We kind of connected over our shared commiseration over Michigan State University sports, but more than that, he loves the gospel with a background in pastoral ministry and was a sending church for ABWE and a board member, and then became one of our missionaries in our North America area of Every Ethne, and really helped to build that into what it is today. And then, of course, is doing a lot of other things besides just doing with Every Ethne, but he's also the national representative for the GARBC, Journal Association of Regular Baptists. And so, Claire, we are so glad to have you. Welcome to our show. I can't believe this is the first time you've been on.
Well, thank you. It's great to be with you guys.
So we're talking about this whole area of church planting. And obviously, when we talk about missions, we talk about church planting. But here you are, a pastor that was in a thriving, growing church, and you left the pastorate to get into this area of ABWE called Every Ethne. And just wondering what, from your perspective, what do you see going on in our nation? What inspired you looking at the landscape that would cause you to leave a pastoral ministry and step into this kind of a more general, broad area of North American church planting?
You know, I took 3 years actually to process that decision. So it was not an easy one. I was at the church for 22 years. And so I didn't take it lightly. I actually was prompted by a statement or a question in Radical by David Platt, where he said, you know, if God asked you to leave your current situation, would you say yes? And for the first time in my life, my immediate answer internally was no. So that was a wake-up call. What was happening at the time was the church was growing. It was a good situation, healthy situation. I'd been there over 20 years. My kids grew up there. And I started to evaluate what's best for the church, because I don't think we ought to evaluate those things in a vacuum. Like, how does this only affect me? but how does it affect the church? And then what is God calling me to do? So simply put, you know, it became apparent that it would be healthy for the church to have a younger guy come in, kind of the age I was when I started with a family, and kind of have a reboot of that. And that's actually what happened. Pastor James Pettit came in, and he's actually now a board member also at ABWE. But he had a family, I think, of five kids. He was in his 30s. And so the church got a rebirth. But I think more importantly, what you're asking is, what I began to see was the need to reproduce. I was working with another church on a possible like merger to be one church in two locations in Indiana and Ohio. And we were going to plant churches up and down the border of Indiana, Ohio. There's a lot of small towns. And it kind of fell through on his side of the coin. It, his leadership was not really game for doing that. But it sparked something in me to focus more on reproduction rather than growth. So we can add people to our gathering, or we can equip and release them to go out and reproduce. And that's really what got me most interested in doing something different, you know, helping churches not just grow, but reproduce.
I love hearing that the Lord used that book in your life, because, you know, there was a lot of people in my age cohort that were impacted by that book, but that had an effect on people outside of just millennials as well. And, you know, anytime churches grow, we're having these questions right now as a church ourselves. We hit a record number this past Sunday. You know, we're asking questions about, do we send, do we plant, not just do we continue to, you know, build bigger and better sanctuaries. And so we resonate with that heartbeat. Claire, what's changed though about church planting in the U.S. And just tell us why we still need churches to be planted here in the States. I think we know in theory, of course, we still need more gospel preaching churches. But, you know, let's be honest, this is also the missions podcast. We know the statistics about the number of unreached people in the world. And we know that as far as churches per capita, America is a pretty great place to be in general compared to a lot of other parts of the world. So why is North America still a place where we need churches to be planted?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I got to ask that question quite a bit, even by other pastors. But there'd be a few reasons. One, just statistically, we continue to decline. Only about 17% of people in the U.S. go to church on a regular basis. We're actually the third largest mission field in the world right now, partly because we're the third largest country in the world. But there's more unsaved people in the United States than any country other than India and China. Now, they do have access to churches, but obviously a lot of people are not taking advantage of that access. What we're finding is, here's an interesting data point, that in an established church, 5 years old or older, that it takes 70 adults to reach one adult with the gospel. That's that actual research data point. So in other words, for every 70 people in an established congregation, they reach one adult a year. In a church plant 3 years or newer, that data point goes to 7 to 1. So it's a huge difference. And I think a lot of it is the focus on evangelism in a new church plant. I think another part of it is there are some people who are willing to be part of something new that's really focused on reaching people like them, than coming into an established church where there's a culture already set and there's kind of a demographic, so to speak, that's in that church where those people maybe don't feel like that's a fit for them. So those would be some of the dominant reasons. Another one that I think is critical is all the immigrant groups that are here. So we have about 600 people groups in the United States. And we had the opportunity to reach them and to mobilize them to plant churches here in the U.S. and also in Canada and reach some of these unreached people groups. So, you know, some of these countries we can't get into overseas, but we can reach those people right here.
Just following up on that for a second, you mentioned people wanting to be with people like themselves. I think that was something that kind of came out of Donald McGavran and then later on really got picked up here in California and around the whole country by Rick Warren. Do you see that as a good trend, or do you see that as something that maybe is catering to a negative impulse within us to find people who just are just like us?
My main goal is to help churches reach people not like them. In fact, I use that phrase all the time. I just preached at a church in Ohio Sunday and made that exact statement. You know, what can we do to cross over to reach people not like us? And that doesn't just mean from a different ethnic group, but different value system, maybe a different sexual orientation, you know, whatever the difference might be, might even just be generational difference. But what will we do to reach people not like us? I do think that, on the other hand, that tends to be what people do. You know, they tend to connect with people like them, or they join a group that's like them. So it's more recognizing that that's a reality and saying, how can we establish a church that maybe reaches people in the same city as church? So you have church A that's maybe 500 people and they're reaching this certain segment, but church B comes in and is planted and they're reaching a whole different part of that community than church A was able to reach. And I don't know as it should be that way, but it tends to be that way. You know, that there's just certain people that aren't going to be reached by that established church. And it might not even be the established church's fault. It's those people don't feel welcome for whatever reason that might be.
Where's the line in your opinion about doing that well, being welcoming, and being driven by that mentality that's, you know, that can lead to, at least in my experience, that can lead to appeasing the unbeliever, right? You even mentioned something like people with different thoughts about the Christian sexual ethic or sexual orientation, right? There's only so far I can accommodate or contextualize. Ultimately, the gospel is actually going to come into collision with a different worldview there. Or maybe even more broadly speaking, I mean, you see churches that pull all of their insights and strategy from the business world. They've got like, okay, here's our target marketing user persona. We're going after the 25-year-old male. Okay, let's condition all of the music and apparel and lighting and atmosphere around reaching him so he feels welcomed. Is there a line there where being welcoming in a biblical way, being warm, hospitable, can lead into a sort of worldliness where we're losing our solid footing? Maybe we're heading down the path to compromise. How do you navigate that? Because that's, I mean, really, I think churches over the last 20, 30 years have kind of, there's been a pendulum swing from one side to the other to say, okay, we're not welcoming at all. We want to be welcoming. But we've actually got to put our flag in the ground on biblical truth as well. How do you navigate that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the simplest way to hit it is recognize the difference between programs and gathering versus relationships and sending. So I think what we want to do is equip our people to be intentional about reaching the people not like them out in their community, in their neighborhood, where they work, where they play, so to speak, or where they go to school. And then as they connect with them relationally and they come to Christ, they're bringing them into the church. And the church is being the church. The church isn't trying to accommodate, you know, different belief systems or different philosophies. The church is being the church, but they're being the church in an unconditionally loving way. So when people come in, they recognize, hey, they're embracing me where I'm at, but they're being clear about the fact that God has something better for me. So I'm going to love this person regardless of their background, but they know, because I'm speaking truth into their life, that God wants them to move in this direction, to become more like Christ, to turn away from whatever sin issues they're facing. So I think on the one hand, a lot of churches view it, well, we need these programs or we need to approach worship this way to get more people to gather. That's not where I see that we need to be. We need to be equipping our people to go out and understand how to build a loving relationship with people not like them, so they come to Christ and then they're able to plug in to the church. you know, the church being the church as God intends it to be.
So that's interesting. So it's almost the error of the highly seeker driven attractional models then is not that they wanted to bring the gospel to the lost, of course, but the mistake is in actually taking what should look like individual hospitality, relationship building, contextualization, and actually rolling that into actually worship, and that overrides the core identity of the gathered church rather than being sort of the ethos of the scattered church. Is that another way of describing what you're saying?
Yeah, I think so. It's more recognizing that we have a mandate, you know, the Great Commission to make disciples. So we're equipping and then releasing our people to do that out where they live, work, and play, you know. And we're not so much concerned about how many people we're gathering. We're more concerned about how many people are we reaching. So the key number is not necessarily how many people show up on Sunday and what we're doing to make that happen. The key number is how many of our people are engaging with their unsaved friends, neighbors, and so on, you know, and to what degree have we equipped them to be successful, or a better word would be effective in that effort.
That's good. I can remember being on the field, and George Collins was our executive director at that time. And we were struggling because they were asking us to like list every month, like how many churches did you plant and how many baptisms did you had? And how many, you know, complete gospel presentations. And here we are in a very restricted access place with unreached people groups. And it was very discouraging putting the numbers down. And he just changed the dynamic and said, how many conversations are you having? How many relationships are you building, yeah, you know, that are leading toward that direction? That's a game changer. Just even thinking about, oh, okay, these are important interactions that I'm having that are necessary. And I realize that's a little bit off topic, but that's helpful, Claire. Just you've pastored in the Midwest. You were born and raised in the Midwest. You've been doing ministry out west for a number of years now. And now you're involved, not now, but you're also involved nationally with church planting and with the Association of Regular Baptists. What are you seeing nationally in this area of evangelism and church planting that has you encouraged? Sure.
Yeah, the encouraging part is I'm seeing a greater awareness of the need to change the focus. So I think a lot of churches have been focused on gathering. They've been focused on programs and what I would call discipleship, where it's mainly knowledge-based. You know, it's a transfer of information. I know these things because I've studied the Bible, I have a degree or whatever, and I'm transmitting that information from myself to the group that's gathered, whether that be a small group, a Sunday school, or a large worship gathering, you know. And what's being recognized is that's not being effective. So we do this thing with pastors all the time where we'll have a group of pastors and we'll ask them to go to one of four corners, and one corner is 75% plus, the other is 50, the other is 25, and the last one is 10. What percentage of your people come to a gathering three times a month? The average is always almost everybody's over in the 75% corner. How many people are engaged in serving in the church? Almost everybody's in the 50%, some in the 25%. How many people in your church are making disciples who make disciples? Everybody moves to the 10% or less corner. So pastors are recognizing we're failing at evangelism, which is the front end of disciple making, and then making disciples. And there's a shift happening. It's kind of odd if you think about it, that we can have a high percentage of pastors who've lost track of the fact that the primary mission is to make disciples who make disciples. But that's really what's happened. The good news is there's a recognition of it now, and more churches are trying to move in that direction. And I'm seeing a really good response to this basic message of let's de-emphasize programs and reemphasize relationships. And I'm not anti-program, but programs ought to be like a launching pad into relationships, not an end all. So we don't measure our success by how many people show up. And the problem is, on the negative side, is we still have a lot of people in our churches that don't want to engage in the mess of relationships. You know, they'll show up for a program because it's an hour long, but they don't really want to engage in a relationship with somebody who's very different than they are. And by different there, I'm talking about especially values, belief systems. You know, they just don't feel like getting involved in the mess of arguing about this stuff.
Hey, listeners, if you've been here for a while, you know our tagline already: helping goers think and thinkers go. Well, we really mean that. Let me ask you, what are you going to do with everything that you're listening to right now on this show? And could it be that the Lord is leading you to join his mission and extend his kingdom among the nations in a new way? Remember that God doesn't call the equipped. He equips the called. He gets the most glory by using normal, weak, doubting people. Maybe you're ready to say what the prophet Isaiah said, "Here I am, Lord. Send me." If you think missions, whether that's short-term or long-term, is in your future, we are here to partner with you and your church in the process of sending you. Our team wants to talk to you here at ABWE. We're a family of ministries extending across more than 80 nations of the globe, engaged in evangelism, discipleship, and church planting. Our team wants to talk to you. Go to abwe.org/sendme. Again, abwe.org/sendme, all one word. No guilt trips, no high-pressure sales tactics, just a friendly voice here to pray with you as you and your church discern your calling. So start the conversation now, abwe.org/sendme.
You know, there's a lot to be encouraged by. You pointed out a few things. There's discouraging trends as well. I don't know anyone that looks at their church and says, "Boy, we're just crushing it with evangelism. Like, we couldn't possibly improve in that area." I know we could. I know I could personally. I'm encouraged, Claire, Scott. I don't know if this has been the case for you all, but even in the last two Sundays since the death of Charlie Kirk, we've had new visitors who have said to us, "We know, in light of everything happening culturally, that we need to be in church right now." We have a pipeline, some have kind of pointed out online, from being a quote unquote reality respecter to being a Christian. In other words, there's more people that are waking up to, you know, maybe the Bible wasn't completely wrong about morality, about right and wrong, about sexuality. And as people are kind of waking up from the lies that culture has told them, there is a pipeline leading from that openness to returning to the faith, or maybe coming into the faith for the first time. So I'm encouraged by that. I'm seeing some signs of what could be genuine revival, in the sense of not a big emotional wave flooding over everybody, but in the sense of people understanding the biblical gospel and coming to embrace it. Are either one of you seeing anything remotely like that in your ministries? Maybe Claire, if you have any thoughts.
Well, I'm definitely seeing a lot of things that are encouraging with this generation, whether it's millennials on down through Gen Z and now Gen Alpha. But what I'm seeing is a real focus on relationships, a real interest in being mentored, a real desire to connect with God, to understand more about Christianity. And I'm seeing that amongst Christians who I'm around more of the time, but also non-Christians as well. So yeah, I agree with you. I think God's doing something with this generation. You know, we're seeing some interesting things happen on secular campuses and Christian campuses alike. So it'll be interesting to see the long-term effect of that. You know, you look at CrossCon, the Passion Conference, I mean, thousands of young people showing up to worship God, to be challenged, to be focused on mission. I mean, that's encouraging.
Yeah. Cross got so large, they had to split into two conferences, which I just learned. Oh, wow. There's two weekends that they're having it now. Scott, what have you seen?
you know, I've heard anecdotally some things. I mean, I was at a pastor's get together recently, and they talked about high schools around here, which is rare. They'd be doing this starting Christian clubs and calling they're called Kingdom Clubs. And I don't know much about them, but they said that one, they were expecting 30 kids and over 100 showed up. And I haven't necessarily seen that. I do think like I've had, you know, the young people I'm regularly working with are very serious about their faith and working very hard to be holy and pursue God. I haven't seen that breakout of like revival here, but I'm hearing other churches say that they're seeing signs of that. So it's hard to tell, you know, like, I mean, Claire, you and I especially have been around a while. And I remember after, you know, 2001, you know, the church is being full after 9/11 and then quickly fell away. So, you know, I'm hoping this will be more than just a cultural moment, that it'll truly be a gospel moment. And I'm praying that way. I could see it happening. It's time for sure.
Yeah. There seems to be a movement, and actually not to get off topic from the U.S. church, but I was just in England in the spring and did a church immersion tour of about 15 churches. And there's a youth movement happening there as well. So I don't, you know, it just seems like God's up to something. I agree with what Scott just said. You know, the proof will be in the pudding down the road, but seems like God is up to something. Of course, he usually is.
Yeah, that's right. He usually is. Yeah. Aslan is on the move, as I saw somebody point out recently. We've got a couple minutes in our overtime episode. We want to talk a little bit more about trends, what's encouraging, maybe what's not encouraging, but then also something you've been really involved in has been ethnic church planting and church networking among Filipinos, among Hispanics, and, you know, these ethnic groups that in the States tend to form these conclaves. There's wisdom in having a strategy to reach into those groups, especially to see biblical churches formed. There's also downsides that come with that kind of a narrow targeted strategy. So we want to think through that with you and get your wisdom. But before we break from our main episode, Claire, you're also in an important leadership role as the national representative of the GARBC. Those who aren't familiar with that association of churches, just can you just for a minute or two introduce us to the GARBC? And tell us what your hope is for that organization moving forward now in 2025 into 2026, almost at this point.
Yeah, sure. No, it's an association of 1,100 churches. It's been in slow decline over the last 25 years, just to be blunt about it. I think what happened, it started in reaction to true biblical liberalism, where people were denying the word of God, the deity of Christ, and so on. And you know, was focused really on right doctrine, you know, on true biblical historical doctrine. And so that was a good thing. And that movement grew over time, over several decades. But what was a good thing became more of an issue-focused thing. So rather than just being focused on doctrine, the focus shifted to what I would call secondary issues, not even secondary doctrinal issues, but methodological issues. And it became a very issue-focused organization. And I think that's why at least one of the reasons for the decline. So moving forward, what we're really focused on is becoming mission-focused. So getting the churches and our pastors really focused back on the mission, what we've just been talking about, evangelism, disciple-making, leadership development, revitalizing and planting churches. So when I talk about the mission of God, that's what I'm talking about. So what we're looking at doing, the vision is to be a gospel-driven movement of interdependent churches. So Baptists have long been known for being independent, and I do believe in church autonomy, but I don't see independent churches in the New Testament. I see interdependent churches. So we really want to be a movement of interdependent churches, transforming lives and communities in every region of North America. So that's where we're headed. Another simple way to say it is we want to be more of a coalition than an association. And we're actually walking through a rebranding process right now to really try to find a way to communicate that more effectively than we currently do. So I don't want to put lipstick on a pig and say, oh, this is a new flashy name. but we are actually moving in a particular direction, and we want that to be reflected in how we communicate who we are. So we really are focused on mission in those ways that I articulated, and becoming more of a coalition, working with our state associations with a shared vision, shared values, shared goals, and shared resources.
I love that description. It's not just about independent churches, interdependent churches. And I believe that. And as a Baptist, I think too many of our churches, because we're independent, we tend to be isolated. And we should be together for the gospel. Somebody should come up with a conference called like Together for the Gospel or something. Maybe
that's a good idea.
Before,
that's an idea.
Yeah. So write that down. Well, Claire, let's continue this conversation. Let's talk about some of the ethnic ministry things that you've been involved in and the philosophy behind that. Let's also talk about trends and what we need to be on the lookout for in these interesting days in which we live. Thank you all for listening to us. To get access to that next bonus segment, go to missionspodcast.com/premium or subscribe within your Apple Podcasts app. Remember, you can reach out to us anytime, alex@missionspodcast.com or scott@missionspodcast.com. And of course, the Missions Podcast is a ministry of ABWE. To learn more about ABWE and its ministry among more than 90 nations, go to abwe.org and take your next step in the Great Commission. And until our next conversation on missions, theology, and practice, go make disciples of all the nations.